Hi guys, I'm Becca Otis from Five Lines Pottery, and I'm located in Van.
And I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Highland Heights, Kentucky.
And welcome to Wheel Talk.
Okay.
I was like, there's no way you're going to get that in time.
I know. It's true.
Okay.
Yeah. Hello.
All right. Hello. We're live.
We're live.
You're wearing your colorful shirt. Is that like a sweater material or is it like a dry fit material?
It's weird. It is kind of like a dry fit material. It's like polyester.
Is it like swishy? Like if it goes against you, it's kind of swishy against itself.
It's smooth, but it's not swishy.
It's not swishy. Okay.
It's not swishy.
Okay.
I would say it's not, it's definitely not like, sweatshirt material.
Mm-hmm. Which would be like all cotton or jersey kind of.
Right. But it is warm and it is stretchy.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It's got some elastic or spandex in there or something.
Yeah. It's the one that I found on Instagram and I was like, yeah, need that.
Yep.
That's the only time Instagram's really just got me.
The only time, but I feel like you've bought other stuff from Instagram ads. Just that?
Maybe twice. Maybe.
What was the other thing? Do you remember?
Well, sometimes Instagram gives me ideas and then I buy things that are not the same product because a lot of the time the Instagram ad is not the best product you can buy.
Do they show you like gadgets and stuff? I feel like mine are. I'm trying to remember what kind of things mine are.
Mine are nootropics to help you like be more focused, and then.
Mm.
Then that one, this one has almost got me. I swear to God, this one's almost got me because it looks really fun. There's this one exercise hula hoop thing that has like a weight on the end of it. And you like hula hoop around. And they're like, this hula hoop is, I don't know, if you like hula hoop for 30 minutes. Oops, sorry. If you hula hoop for 30 minutes, it's like running for a whole, mile or something like that.
Is that like the old school 90s where you have the loop around your ankle and you skip over it kind of deal?
No, not a skip-o. Like, not a what is that, a skip-o? Or, it's not a skip-o. It's, but, no, you, like, put it around your waist and there's a weight on the end and you have to, like, make the thing go around and it looks, like, so much fun.
Can you actually hula? I can't really. Can you do a hula hoop and keep it up?
No, but I feel like if I got this, I could. You know, like
it's probably like an assist, right? So it kind of like does it.
Eventually, I could, and I don't want it to like lose weight necessarily, but it does look like an exercise that would be a blast. And like,
I can just see you doing that outside your van. You're just fucking. I mean, you'd probably scare people off. Nobody would want to approach you.
I know.
She's just in her fucking world over there. And then you just go and sit in your hammock.
Yeah, it looks like so much fun. And I've almost bought it a few times on the, like, I go to Amazon and find like a cheaper version. But yeah, that one's almost got me a few times.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much never engage with any ads on Instagram just because I know that they're going to continue to pump it my way. And yeah.
Oh, for sure.
I do not give in. I'm more heavy resistant to stuff like that just because I know what it's doing and I don't want to.
Yeah. I won't buy things right off the bat. That is not so, like, this is the only time that I've literally clicked it and been like, buy. But typically what will happen is I'll look at it and I'll be like, oh, that looks interesting. And then I'll do a bunch of research on it and then I'll buy another thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Sometimes I'll go to the comments to just see people roast this product because they're just saying how dumb of an idea it is or whatever. Some of that is kind of entertaining, but...
I feel like there was something recently that I was like, this is... I'm such an idiot. But I can't remember what it was. That makes me sad that I can't remember what it was. But I believe that it was something that I have not used. I don't know. But I do know there was something that I bought and I was like, this was a bad idea. I should have done more research, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was, separate topic, I was chatting with my mom yesterday and she heard our chat about the hot air balloons and stuff and the parade. She gave me a little update about the Derby Festival balloon race is what they called it, but So do you remember I told you they like drop sandbags on an X on the ground?
Yeah.
So yeah. The winner of that is the one that they call it the hair balloon. I think it's like H-A-R-E.
Ooh. Like a rabbit, hair rabbit.
And then what they do is they will lead the next year. So they will be the first to take off the following year. And then they, you know... The landing spot where the X is completely dependent on the wind. So, like, they can't really choose ahead of time where that X is going to be. So, the hair balloon takes off. They go wherever. And then they drop down. They put the X down. And then they tell people where it is. And then they follow from there. There's still a lot of them that don't actually, like, get there because the wind is, you know, whatever. But that's kind of how they determine where the landing spot is. The sandbags are going to be dropped are going to be. So that's kind of how it works. And she said, you know, they land all over the place. So like one time they landed in this like, you know, school baseball field over by my grandparents' house. So they, you know, they just happened to land there because that's where they could safely do it. And, you know, the van follows them or whatever. And then they pick it up and all that stuff. But yeah, I think she said it's sometimes we used to like follow them and try to like, you know, see where one of them landed or something, you know.
Oh, that's fun.
But yeah, that was a little extra context because I was thinking there was a specific X, but in a specific spot, but it's the first balloon that takes off decides where the X is going to go.
Yeah.
Just because you can't control where it's going to take you for the most part. So
yeah,
that was pretty interesting. And there was one that was like a really big cow, apparently, like the Dean's Milk brand, I think, was a cow.
Oh.
And then they had, of course, not surprising, they had a big Kentucky bourbon bottle.
Oh, yeah.
As one of them. And then there's a bunch of other like, you know, fancy color ones and design ones. So
fun story about your mother today, which is another reason why I love her so much. I called her because I was having a life crisis involving insurance, health insurance, and I tried to call my mom, and she's on a cruise, and I forgot. And so I couldn't call her, and so then I called your mom, and then she didn't answer, and then I was having a beer later after I had pretty much figured out the crisis, and I was like, I'm sorry, I'm drinking a beer right now, and she's like, oh, that's fine. Call me later. Have a beer for me. and then she hung up the phone. And I was like, I love that your mom.
She doesn't like
beer. For me.
She doesn't drink
beer.
Well,
she said, have a drink for me. I think I said I was at a bar.
Yeah. But
I love that she's just like.
But what could she have answered like quickly that your mom wasn't available? Like just asking general questions about.
It was not a quick question.
Oh, okay.
I was just needing of moral support and guidance. Like,
oh, okay.
I needed motherly guidance. Board.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
gotcha.
So that's who I called.
So you just had to figure it out, and it sounds like you did.
Yeah, kind of. I got good news. I'm so poor that Tennessee is giving me $340 in credits towards insurance. So. Yeah. I
Is it a plan through the state kind of thing?
Yeah,
as well?
Care like healthcare.gov. And I was like, if I get this plan, am I like, what happens if I have to go to the doctor when I'm in Utah? You know? So that's what I was trying to figure out. But turns out it's only emergencies. So
you can only use it for emergencies?
Well,
or like urgent care?
Go to a doctor. Yeah, I can't like go to a doctor in Utah.
Oh, you can't use it for preventative health. You have to go to a general practitioner in Tennessee if you're going to use it for that. You can only go to like urgent care or something like that in Utah.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, that makes sense.
It makes sense. So, yeah. I also got new glasses.
I see. Yeah. Did you get, you got three pair or four pair?
Four.
Four. Okay.
I got two. I got them from Vu Glam, if anybody is interested in my fun glasses. VOOGLAM. And I got two pairs that were like the cheap ones, like $20 to $30. You know, and then I got one pair that's for driving that was like $80, and then one pair that has sunglasses that was $80. So I figured spending
a
little extra.
They're all for prescription and sweet.
Spending a little extra, like all the frames were the same. It was just the lenses, you know.
Right.
Like adding in the driving was really important because I'm going to be driving at night and like I don't want to have glare and stuff like that.
Yeah, anti-glare stuff. Okay, cool. Yeah, I haven't got glasses in a bit, probably a year and a half, maybe 2 years. Because I think the last time I went to the eye doctor, my prescription didn't change from like the year and a half prior to when I went. So I feel like the last time I went about a year and a half ago didn't change from a year and a half before that. So
yeah, but you got new glasses like last year, I remember, because I did the vote.
Yeah, but I just did the exact same prescription. So I should probably go to the eye doctor just to get a quick check. Because our eye insurance with my company is free, so you can go get eye exams for nothing. I think once a year.
Yeah. Yeah, these, this is my exact same prescription from last year, and it's technically expired, the prescription is. So the online stuff lets you put in just the number.
Right.
They don't care.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it was like, I put them on today, and I was like, wow. So clear.
Well, yeah, when I saw you got them, one of the pair, I was like, do you even have, I think it was the blue and orange pair. I was like, are there even lenses in there? Because they look so clear.
I tried these ones on first, I think, and they were so clean that I put them on and I was like, am I even wearing glasses?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was cool. How was your week?
It's pretty good. I've been, I don't have a lot on the calendar, so it's nice to actually get some studio time in. I've been cranking away at the Mug Club things, did some decal work last night, got some throwing done, and going through that. I'm still like, so I've got a good, I told the guy at the brewery that I've got a solid 70 ready to go, like 35 of each, like, because they're two different color glazes, so
yeah,
you know, 1 to 35 of two sets, and I'm like, okay, I want to like get these off my hands, like I want to get them to you as I get the other numbers filled in. But yeah, in reality I've probably got, I just did a decal firing, I think there were about 40 in there, maybe 30, so I've probably got about another 30, probably about another 40 that are going to be finished when this decal comes out.
Okay.
So I'll be at about 110, and then I've got a bunch of bisque ware. So I feel like I've got it's to me, I'm like, I feel like it's counterproductive to just start counting everything and try to get it. I mean, I'm feeling good when I get pieces finished, but I feel like it's a little counterproductive for me to keep counting bisque ware and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I'm getting to that point. I probably need to, bisque and glazed, I'm probably sitting at about 150, I think.
Okay.
So,
are you going to be good for December? Do you need help?
No, I think I will be good.
Okay.
Like I just threw, I think, I'm trying to think if I threw 18. I think I threw about 18 on Sunday.
Okay.
So like I can handle those, and I just got another, well, I just bisque fired those. So I probably got about 40 bisque fired, I think.
Okay.
So, you know, I think I'm good to glaze, and then we'll get to about 150. I just want to get some in his hands so that he's feeling good about it, and then get the next batch going. So that's the main focus right now. And I feel like I should be doing some other things, but I'm like, I need to just focus on that just to, you know, it's a little monotonous to keep doing the handles and stuff, but
yeah,
they're looking good. So yeah, so I talked with you a couple days ago about like, okay, what are the, cause I've habitually been like having issues with like the volume and second guessing myself. And I make, you know, I made some a little too big and I made the first batch way too small. Yeah. So I was like, okay, there's a batch of them that are like holding 24 ounces instead of 20 ounces. And I had the first batch that was like 17 ounces instead of 20. So I'm like, okay, can I do some measurements at Bisqueware and like what size mugs, height, width are good at Bisqueware, putting them through the glaze with and figuring out what the volume is. And then like, okay, here's what this height and width Bisqueware is going to yield volume wise. But that's not like an exact measurement. It's just kind of like a guess because I don't make them so perfect from one to the next. So I'm like, okay, that gives me something to say. Okay, if this Bisqueware is this size, it should hold about this much. And then there's some that are like a little off. So then I was going through like, is there a way that I can measure the volume in water at Bisqueware stage and just pour the water in them, get a rough guess of how much water it holds, document that, and then kind of group them by volume at Bisqueware, and then put them through the glaze, see how much they hold after glaze, and then kind of use that as a barometer of like, okay, if they hold about 24 ounces at Bisqueware, are they going to end up holding 20 ounces at glazed? So like, that gives me a little more confidence, but I don't know if I'm just confusing myself because it's already bisque. Like the only time wasted is that I accidentally glaze something and then I have to remake the number. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm spinning my wheels too much and worrying about it or if I should just get them through the process. I think I'm trying to save myself from having too many glazed pieces that are not usable with numbers on the bottom, but I don't know.
Yeah. It's funny because, are you using the laser level yet?
I didn't get the laser level.
I thought you did.
I was going to, but I didn't.
Well, that was a mistake.
Well, I would, the last three throwing sessions, I've pretty much narrowed it into like, okay, 6 and a quarter to 4 and a quarter is pretty much the exact measurements I need. So I feel like you don't need to send me a laser level.
I have an extra.
You have an extra one? What do you mean? You have two of them?
Yeah, I have no fucking clue how I got three laser levels, but I had three.
But I only need to make like 50 more. Is it worth doing the laser level for 50 if I've already thrown enough? I feel like that's a learning curve of like, I gotta set it up and shit, and I don't know that.
Well, it might be.
I mean, maybe it'll be good for the future.
Yeah, I think it might be nice for the future.
I mean, one thing I think the laser level would definitely improve would be having a straighter side, because some of them, if the sides aren't perfectly straight, it makes the decals harder to put on smoothly. So, like, I can see where having a laser line would take some of that guesswork out.
Yeah, what's funny is that I sent the Beals a laser level, and now I'm going to send you a laser level. I was thinking about it when I forgot to update about my weekend.
Yeah.
But you can continue your update. And
I mean, that was pretty much it. That was my thought process. Okay. So for anybody out there doing mug clubs, like maybe because I was trying to guess like, okay, what's the shrinkage rate from bisqueware to glazedware? Is it a standard? I was like, is it like half of what the total clay shrinkage is from wet to dry to glazed, which my clay is like 12%. I'm like, okay, it's probably about 6% between bisque and glaze. I don't think that's accurate. It's actually more than that. It's like, I think it's like 10 to 12%, which is counterintuitive, but I think it doesn't mean that like the true shrink rate is not 12%. I think it just means it's 10% from bisque to glazed, which is still like a percentage of the total shrinkage. So I'm trying to figure out if volume is a barometer. I think it is, but I'm still not totally scientifically settled on it. But yeah, that's it.
I think that most of the people that have been listening to our podcast for more than 3 years are with me when I say there's a reason that we don't do mug clubs, and this is it. No, everybody needs, but I know everybody needs to go through this learning curve, and it will definitely, mug clubs grow you as a potter probably more than anything else, because you have to make the exact same thing over and over, and
you know what, it makes me,
what is that sound? Sweet Jesus. The train is like dying out there.
Oh, really? I can't hear it.
Any number of, like, when you have to do 200 of anything, it makes you a better potter, just generally. Mm-hmm. Like, when you start throwing the first one, if you don't have a laser level, the last one will be like an inch taller. And it's
The same clay bot, the same amount of clay, and I'm like, these are holding way more. Like, what?
It seems kind of productive. You're getting better at throwing is what you're doing. You're getting better at throwing, and that's why a level or a pointer is so important in these situations, because you have to remind yourself, like, every time that you can't go that high, you know.
But would you consciously weigh out less clay the second 100 you make, or would you still weigh out the same amount of clay? You would just keep them thicker and like a thicker bottom,
keep them thicker and keep them the same is essentially what's happening.
But the first one's not going to be the same as the last one if your throwing is improved, or maybe there's just more weight at the bottom, or
what's happening is your throwing's improved, but you're learning how to put the clay in certain spots that it needs to go. And so I just finished throwing like 50 of the thumb cups, the shitty cups, and the first four were like super short, and then the next batch was like a medium height. The last batch of like 30, I think it was like 38, they're all fucking super tall, and they're beautiful, and they're exactly how I want them to be. But you could just see them getting taller and taller and taller as I like went along, because I was like, fuck the laser level, I don't need it.
So are you gonna, you didn't squash the first four, did you? You still kept them, you just are gonna, you're gonna give those to certain people that got like a pair of them so that they're similar size and
or just one. I mean, they're not bad by any means, they're just a little bit shorter than I would normally have. But yeah, but the last ones definitely were so good.
Okay. Yeah.
But
my early on was the weight. The weight, I was at like a pound and a half, and that was not enough. I needed like, and now I throw them with a pound and three quarters, which almost seems like too much. But I feel like it could be like a pound, 1.6 or 1.65 or something.
How much is a pound and three quarters? How many ounces is that? A pound and a half.
Let's see. A pound is 16 ounces, so a quarter is 4. So 16 plus 12 is 28 ounces.
Okay. Yeah, that's a bit steep. I would probably do 24 ounces for a 20-ounce mug, but still 28 is fine. You want them to be hefty, because they're going to be going through the dishwasher and everything like that. Like, there's nothing wrong with a 28-ounce beer mug, you know?
It was mainly the, like, less clay. I could maybe get it to where I need it, but it was a stretch because I had to do a fourth pull in there, you know, do three comfortable pulls, and I'm easily to where I need to be.
Right, and now you're like, ugh, not an issue.
Yeah, But then I'm like, am I making them hold too much volume?
Yeah.
But if I had that laser level, it would probably straighten up the walls and tighten in that volume better.
Yep.
Because some of them might have a little bit of a belly, which can, I mean, a belly down at the bottom, I mean, that's going to add an ounce or two, like, pretty reasonably. So, yeah, I don't think...
I'm going to steal one of Sarah's 6x6 box and send it to you tomorrow.
I don't think this experience has scared me away from doing another one. I would still do another one in the future. I think what I would do was change my timeline.
Yeah.
I would not give such a certain timeline that would put that I shouldn't have promised at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah. I probably should have said like December 15th or something. But mm-hmm. Once it's all documented and out there. I mean, I could have changed it early on. I didn't know that they were going to promise, "Hey, you're going to get them a month early before 2024," which is like I shouldn't assume. But yeah. So, and we'll actually talk with Potter. We'll have I'm going to chat with her. If you want to chat with her, you can, but I was going to chat with her about, she's doing a mug club sort of situation. And I wanted to talk with her about how she organizes it. It's semi mug club related, but not exactly the same as mine. It's just like making custom mugs for them and then they sell them. It's not,
mm-hmm.
It's not like a set. In the same way as a brewery would do. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll have that coming soon. But, yeah, anything else for the weekend? What was going on? I don't think you shared what you were going to share. I mean, you're talking about the mug club thing, but.
Oh, okay. So, I did a show this weekend, and it was medium good. It was
Bloomington,
good.
Right?
It was Bloomington Handmade Market, and last year, I did $3,700. This year,
it's a 2-day show in Bloomington.
It's a 2-day show in Bloomington. And okay, so I did $3,700. But this year, I came to the show, I didn't have any thumb cups. And last year, I sold $1,200 in thumb cups. Okay.
Mm hmm.
$1,200 in thumb cups. And so, and then like a multitude of other things just in clay. Right. And then I sold 9 fancy cups and then the rest
just in clay. What do you mean by
like
that?
Like I had spoon rests and I had mixing bowls and I had,
oh, okay.
Like
yeah.
clay,
other pottery things that are not
pottery things. Yeah. And so and I think this,
are there a lot of other potters at that show?
There's a fair amount, yeah.
Okay.
There's a fair amount. But so going into it this year, I was like, oh, okay, I want to do like 2,500 after, because we know that this year kind of sucks compared to last year. After.
You said 3,700 last year, right?
Yeah.
37. Okay.
After I looked at all my stats, I was like, holy shit. And that, but then while this is all happening, I did a pre-order for thumb cups on Friday, and which happened to be very good timing. Cause I also took the pre-order to the Bloomington show and people could order, like I could send them a link through text and, nice. And so.
But they pay, did they not pay at your point of sale?
No,
they actually paid on their own.
Up, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. And I said, you know, it's ending on Monday, and I did get a few people that
That's
did
true, because you had to get shipping addresses and stuff, right? They had to fill all that
right.
stuff out.
And so, I wanted to tell you how many thumb cups I sold, and I'm counting the thumb cup presale and Bloomington together, because it's hard to separate them, but I will tell you how much I sold in thumb cups.
How many thumb cups did you sell last year? You said $1,000 worth? Did you have a quantity? Of how many that was, because the prices were drastically different last year from what I remember.
Yeah, the prices were.
Because I think this will be a good example of price differences in how much you actually like.
Yeah, this is a good idea. Okay, I'm ready.
It's Sweet.
So last year I sold 34 thumb cups, 15 medium earrings, 17 small earrings, 21 posts, 5 fancy cups, and then I think I sold 4 small fancy cups.
And those 34 thumb cups made up about $1,000 from what you said?
$1,020. Okay.
$1,020, okay.
Okay, so this year... I'm going to do it from the 10th to the 13th because that's how many days when the thumb cup started. And,
yeah, the pre-order.
This year I sold $1,862 in thumb cups.
Which is how many?
And 49
thumb cups versus 34.
Wait, hold on. Actually, I lied.
I was going to say, it seems like the price would be higher.
Okay, sorry. 2014, and the count is 53.
Damn, so you almost doubled the revenue. Mm-hmm. 53 thumb cups versus 34, so drastically more.
Not drastically more.
18 more, something like that.
And then my earrings were all one price at $30, so I sold 720 of those. I only sold three fancy cups. And I think I sold 3 mini fancy cups.
Do you know how many of those do you know how many thumb cups you actually sold, like, in person at the show that people pre-ordered?
No, I don't. I think I sold like a couple hundred dollars.
Okay. That's good though. Did you have physical ones there for them to see?
I did have physical ones for them to see, and somebody just grabbed it and wanted to buy it at, like, towards the end of the show, and I was like, okay, whatever. So I sold the blue one.
Okay.
But
it probably helped to have them some, they could feel it and actually do it. That's cool.
Yeah. And some people from last year were like, oh, I wanted more of these. And I was like, well, here's your link. So anyway, this year, the $2,000 in thumb cups, and then I made $2,000 at the show. So my total collected, as you say, was $4,181.15. Now, a lot of that didn't have any tax because it was out of state. But,
because they're pre-orders and,
right. Because, like, when you go to a show,
you got to pay shipping out of that, probably. So,
yeah, because I had free shipping. That's why they were $38. So, So I feel very happy.
Nice.
This weekend. I feel very, very content and very happy, especially since my current bank account is almost $5,000, which is really nice.
I like the idea of having something for them to, like, I get it. Ideally, it would be nice for them to take something away with them, and they would probably love that. But it's kind of nice to... You're kind of setting your schedule for the next couple weeks by having, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how long it takes you to make them. It sounded like you were going to get a lot of it done within like a week and a half or a week. But
well, they're already thrown and in the kiln.
Yeah. So it's kind of nice to have something for them to buy. And also, you know, hey, they'll get them within a couple weeks and in time for the holidays and stuff. And it's not.
Right. And yeah. And me saying like, hey, just so you know, it's free shipping and you'll get them in 2 weeks.
And they don't have to carry it around with them. That doesn't give them an excuse to say, I don't want to carry this around. It's like, purchase it. I mean, I wish the point of sale could be a little bit easier of...
Me too.
Not having to... I mean, they could purchase it from you, but you'd have to, like, get their shipping address when they... I don't know.
Right.
Which kind of sucks.
Yeah. But,
That's cool, though. That's nice. So you beat last year's sales because of the thumb cups.
Well, because of the thumb cups, but like at the show, I only made 2,000, but I still feel like that was pretty okay.
Yeah.
Considering, Sunday was super slow. So, you know, I feel pretty good about it. And, that it's like 2 weeks of work maybe for me. So that was what was really nice.
Yeah. The pre-order was a good idea.
Yeah.
And you were nervous about it. You were second guessing. You were like, I don't even want to do this, right?
I was second guessing, and I did not want to do it. So I'm glad I did it. I'm glad that Rachel was like, buck it up and just do it.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah. All right, now that we're 35 minutes in, I think that we talked about a lot of valuable stuff in that.
Yeah, it wasn't just bullshit.
No. Should we do our question?
Yeah, we could do our short question. This one is from Blue Nose Trading, which Tori Salas, I believe. Yeah. I want to say she shares our podcast every single week when it comes out. I think
she's a gem.
She's a very habitual Saturday listener, so we appreciate that, Tori. Nice. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And she always shares it in Instagram stories because I see the reposts on Wheel Talk, so thanks for that. All right. Her question is, do you use Etsy ads? If so, how do you decide what listings are best to advertise and how much money do you put into them? Thanks, friends.
Yeah.
So you currently do Etsy ads. I asked this before. I've done them before, but I haven't really put a lot of effort into them because I didn't see much results, but it's hard to gauge. So what do you do, or how did you decide to start doing it?
I started doing it because I wanted to build up my, build up natural selection sales, I guess. I don't know.
Natural selection sales? You wanted to just get a quantity of sales going? Is that why?
Well, yeah, but I also wanted sales from, not direct sales. I wanted sales that, people just found me on Etsy. And,
But an
and
ad
so,
is not that. It's a sponsored thing. It's bumping you up.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know, but I'm saying I didn't want it from, Instagram. I wanted it from Etsy.
More organic.
Yes, that's the term.
Organic.
And so... at first, and Andrew told me to do it. At first I went pretty heavy on it and then I stopped, doing super heavy because I wasn't making any money, but now I just do $1 a day. And last month I made $119, of revenue from it. And then I spent $28.
Okay. Yeah. Cause Etsy does a pretty good job of actually attributing sales to the ads. So it gives you those stats. Yeah, so you got $119 in sales that you wouldn't have got without spending that $28. Potentially.
Right.
Likely they wouldn't have saw your post and actually engaged with it or whatnot. Okay. Were there certain things that actually... Did you do everything for a dollar? Everything?
No.
Or is it very select? How did you decide?
I chose my studs because those are the cheapest and they're probably the most popular. So, I choose very specific items.
Okay.
That way that dollar can go all towards it, you know?
Yeah. I'm wondering if there's a ratio of how much you should spend to the cost of the item that you're choosing, because I mean, it would make sense. The cheaper items would probably be more likely to move because the price.
Yeah.
But I wonder if spending more money on a higher priced item would provide better profit results than, I don't know. I wonder if there's a formula there. Because I'm I would probably choose my spoon rests or my shot glasses because they're the best. Well, spoon rests aren't the best sellers. I don't know why spoon rests don't move on Etsy. It doesn't make sense to me. But the shot glasses move.
Because Etsy is a spoon rest heaven.
But I think my prices on spoon rests are very comparable or low.
Yeah.
They're still below average price-wise compared to others on there. But I don't know. Did you see they have a new price... optimize pricing kind of beta feature? I don't know if you have it on yours. I have it on mine. It's a new feature called, I want to say it's called optimize pricing. See listings. It's called optimize prices. and it shows you individual listings and prices of similar listings. So you can see, like, here's the range. Here's the median range. You know, this this mug, the median range is $42.86 to $47.37. And my price is low. It's below the median range at $30 because it's a small mug. And then you could hover over the low side and see other images of mugs that are at a similar price point. And then you can hover on the high side and see ones that are in the high price point.
Interesting.
So I haven't really used it because I don't know how much it factors in whether people are pricing it at $42 with free shipping versus me that's $30 no free shipping.
Right.
So I don't know if that's factored in, but that's off topic, but yeah, I would probably choose the shot glasses. Just those, like, you know, I could sell more quantity of those. And as long as I can keep up with them, I would choose to do that. Or I would prefer to do something that has a quantity high enough that it would stay on Etsy, because I think those longer life items are better to bring more attention to them, so that as the ads get people to buy stuff, it'll also help with the algorithm of showing up for people searching, because other people are buying it. It's showing activity, as well as, like, hopefully you're getting positive reviews and 5-star reviews from those items that people bought. So I think that helps you in the algorithm as well, to show that, like, hey, this is popular and people are liking it.
Yeah.
I think all those things help. So if you have items like that, I would suggest targeting the ads at those. If it's a one-off piece that is not a multiple quantity item, I don't know that the ad would be
think it needs to be something that's, like, consistent. Yeah
There's, like, actually
a white spoon rest that you know you can duplicate.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't have any items that are multi-quantity, because you're like, well, each one of my pieces is unique, then maybe have something. Maybe you need to make something, or choose an item that's within a range of something that you can reproduce, that you're fine with putting 5 on there. And maybe you have 5 on hand to ship immediately, or maybe it's something that, you know, you can do a semi-made to order, glazed to order, where you have 5 of them that are glazed or bisque fired, and then you glaze them within a day or two after the order, and then you can get it out within a week or something, depending on your workflow. But I've done a dollar a day before. I don't know that I did it for, like, a whole week or a whole month at a time. I think I probably did it for a couple weeks at a time and just tried it. I don't remember what kind of items I had in my shop at that point. My shop was way less popular at that point, so I think I was using it as a way to try to drive just sales, because I wasn't getting organic sales. So I was trying to get some semblance of activity so that I could get things out. So it was kind of like discounting my work in a way to hope I can reach customers that are satisfied when they get the item. So in that, it's kind of like, you know, you're paying for something. It's kind of like marketing or whatever. So you're paying for something extra to help with your item sales. But I feel like maybe I should give it a try around this time of year. Maybe I should try it on some of those items and see what happens, because a lot of it is, I like some of the stock, I don't care, I just want to get rid of it. So I hate picking up pieces in the new year and seeing pieces that are like have a 2022 on them, especially if it's 2024. I'm like, oh, man, I need to get rid of this thing. So, I think I'll probably do that. There's a friend of mine that's in Cincinnati. She does a lot of, I want to say pet portrait mugs. So it's custom portraits on mugs. And I want to say she throws a couple dollars a day all the time, or maybe it's $5 a day or whatever, but it's one of those that she feels like it's really worth it to do it. and she keeps doing it. So as far as I know, she still does it. I don't know. I'm not positive, but I believe it's something that she still does. Susan Altano pottery. Let's see. I'm curious how many sales she has on Etsy. 5,000 sales on Etsy.
Damn.
Yeah, so she does. And the way she, oh man, these are, I feel like I should send you her Etsy and you can like look at it, but it's one of those where she has, she has a lot of listings. So in one, she has 47 listings, 39 of them are mugs.
My kiln just turned off.
Oh, I was like, what is that? So she has a lot of, you know, custom pet portraits, but you know, there might be a lot of overlap in the listings where one of them says like custom mug or cat mug custom. Right. And then there's like custom pet portrait. Like you could probably get a cat on the custom pet portrait one as well as the, you know, the cat one. And then there's just like standard cat ones that are just kind of generic. So,
oh, the curl at the end of the handle.
Yeah.
Oh, the handle curl.
So it's so for her, I think having multiple listings that have activity, I think it gives, it's probably, oh my god, Marble, it's probably helpful for the algorithm to show there's like they have a lot of options, but I don't know.
That's amazing that she's gotten so many sales. How many yeah. sales do you have?
I think I have,
hold on.
Do you want to guess?
3,200.
Because you just saw it. Oh, 3,235. No, did you really
did
just
not
guess?
See anything. I just, well, you started to say, I think I have, so it was like 3,200.
Yep, 3,235.
Dude, I should be on The Price is Right. Truly.
It's a lit, it's somewhat deceiving. I think I said this before. The sales is the quantity of items you've sold. It's not individual orders. That's a different number. But
yes.
Regardless, it's still a lot. So yeah.
RD so Ceramics does not come up in the search engine. That's a bummer.
In Etsy?
Yeah. I searched it. It's not there.
Really?
You are nowhere to be
Damn
found.
Damn it. I need to improve that. Are you talking about in a single word or?
Yeah, RD Ceramics in a single word.
Oh, I don't do that. Maybe I should do that. Well, I see me, but I don't know if that's because I already like am part of my thing. I don't know.
Oh, and it does say, did you mean the shop RD Ceramics?
But wait, you don't see them in the search results because I see them. Mm-mm. Maybe I need to be in incognito so it doesn't know that it's me or something.
Yeah.
Because I see a lot of my stuff in here.
Damn. How many people have I sold to?
Because it looks like a few of my listings have Etsy pick on them. Which seems to be good.
I have 329 sales. Cool. Okay. Do we need to say anything more about ads?
I don't think so. Give it a go. See what you think. I would say, you know, I don't want to say lower your expectations, but go in with, you know, I would say no expectations and just
yeah,
be pleasantly surprised or use it as a learning opportunity.
Yeah. For sure. All right, let's get to, oh, you know what we should first do?
Yeah, what should we first do?
That is also talking about our topic, kind of, at the same time. But how's your new kiln running, Ryan?
It's going great. I am noticing it is quite insulated because of the kiln brick. So it's taking a little longer to cool, but that's to be expected with a thicker kiln wall.
That does happen.
But yeah, it's been firing perfectly. I need to get back to making a little short kiln log. I haven't done that because it's digital. It's like I don't think about it, but
yeah, because it has its own kiln log on it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it'll give you. I haven't looked at the past ones. I know it gives you could probably look at the last one, or I need to probably research this on the website, but yeah, I'm like brand new. I don't need to worry about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's great. The controller's great. Pulling up my old firing schedules and stuff is great. They're already like preset in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just on point. Yeah, the controller's really good.
Yeah, I definitely am gonna have to be using the website probably in the next couple of days because I've got to replace the thermocouples in my kiln, and the best
Do you so
resource.
you have three, correct?
I have three, and the best resource for that, really, honestly, truly, unbiasedly, is hotkilns.com. But for reals, though, it is. I have a freaking Konark kiln, and I use hotkilns.com to diagnose my shit. Yeah, it is a very good website with a lot of resources. So happy about that.
How terrible did that thermocouple look? Or your thermocouples? Do they look pretty bad?
It looks fine. It's got a crack in the ceramic part, but that's normal.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we must have accidentally
Not
bumped it.
as bad
Yeah.
as the one that's in your firebox, from what I remember seeing.
Oh, yeah. The
That thing
firebox is
is.
hanging by a thread.
Like literally, there's barely like if you have a few more bits of things crust like fall off, there's gonna be no connection.
A few more flecks and we'll have no connection left. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know how that thing's hanging on. That thing is
When I
like imagine putting power through that, or I'm guessing there's no power going, or maybe there's a slight power going through it just to.
Yeah. Well, when I posted a video or a picture of my thermocouple, so many people were like, I need a they were like, this makes me feel so much better about mine.
I mean, the thing is with your kiln, it's so small, the risk is very low of like messing something
Yeah.
up, I guess. It just errors and you just replace it in 5 minutes, hopefully, and then you're back on track. So
Yeah, we're kind of getting off schedule, but anyway, use the freaking website for hotkilns.com. Hotkilns.com. We're gonna be
hi,
talking
kids.
plenty about hot kilns today, so you'll get your recaps. But back to the kiln. So what's crazy about this kiln is that, or about the thermocouple, is that it's been that thin for like 4 months. And I've just been like taking it in and out of the van. And I
Is
put like little, and I keep all of the shelves in the kiln, and I keep all of the bricks in the kiln, and I
what?
position them so that they won't touch the
They don't slide in there or anything or fall over?
No, I put my stilts, I put them blocking the thermocouple so it can't get to it. But yeah, like that, I'm so surprised that it lasted through me going up to Michigan. It
Well,
was
I wonder if because it's kind of bent at 90 degrees, I wonder if that has any impact on how, like,
much heat
if it would
it
last
knows.
longer
Yeah, I
if
don't
it
know.
was straight versus bent,
Well, it's got a lot
because there
more
was,
wire exposed, so
yeah.
it's figuring out the heat through the entire thing. This is such a small kiln that, yeah, I don't know. But I
I
do
mean, it's
have
only,
another.
and the like length of wire you're talking about is only like 2 or 3 inches of wire, right? It's not
Yeah.
significant, but it's.
It's 3 inches. Yeah, I think 2.5 or 3. What's wild is that I actually have another one. It's in the van. I finally had to like take it out of the kiln and put it somewhere safe so I didn't like
'Cause you
hit it.
probably have to take it out from the inside of the kiln and
Yeah.
like push it through.
Yeah. I need to order the parts for this kiln. I think the what did you get on your head? I think the the elements are going to go soon, too.
There's more than one element in there?
I think there's two little itty-bitty ones. Maybe it's one that wraps all the way around.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, yep. That's Becca's kiln situation. Come here.
Wow. It is like hanging on by a thread.
Sorry, I just had to clean Lloyd's head.
White cat problems.
Seriously, it didn't even get clean.
Especially when he's rolling around outside on the concrete and getting into mischief.
Yeah, it looks like he got in a fight with a thing of poop. Like,
oh God.
He probably just got some car oil on him, but it's right in the middle of his forehead. It looks like a little marker.
All right. Do you want me to read the question we're talking about today?
Yes.
All right. So this leads into the topic for the day. This comes from The Pottery Mason. I believe we've heard from them a few times before. Hey guys, me again. I would love to get a larger kiln when I expand my studio space next year, and I'm totally sold on an L&L. But I don't know which kiln to get. Can y'all do a segment, sponsored or not, on kiln sizes? I currently have a Scut 822, so put a pin in that.
Okay.
Not sure I could get a much taller kiln because I'm short. She's 5'2". But outgrowing the kiln size. What's a great next size up for potters who do semi-production work?
You said it's got 822?
822.
Okay, so let's figure out what size. I'm pretty positive this is a 3 cubic foot kiln.
Yeah.
Pretty positive. Wow, Scott, your fucking website. I just need what it is. Oh, the specs. Okay. Alrighty then. It's a cone 10, 3.2 cubic feet. Okay, so it's tiny. It's a baby kiln. So
yeah. The comparable kiln for L&L, 3.2 cubic feet. In their, like, typical pottery kilns would be the E18M. So, it's like 18-inch shelf, I think, is what that means. Or 18-inch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we're not really going to talk about prices in this episode. If you need to know what prices are, we had an episode called Kilns, Kilns, Kilns. And you can go back and look at that one. This might be a good segue into that one.
Mm-hmm.
But that was like a long time ago before we were even sponsored by L&L. And also, it might have been the episode that got us sponsored by
maybe.
L&L.
I think it might have been, actually.
Yeah. So,
I'm trying to remember what episode number it is. We can link to that, but
yeah.
I believe it was back in the first 100 episodes.
Yeah, it was.
69. December of 2020. Oh my gosh.
Fuck. Damn.
I don't know if it was that episode, but it might have been that episode. There was another kiln episode that we did, but it doesn't matter. Yeah. So
for reference, a 3 cubic foot kiln is about, this one is, hers is an 18-inch opening. That means that the whole thing is like 22 inches. But the shelves are like 16 inches. Which almost doesn't even make sense. I felt like mine were much smaller, but
the comparable L&L, it says they're 15-inch shelves.
Yeah.
Which I believe is accurate because I still have some 15-inch shelves that a couple half shelves that I use in my big kiln.
Okay, that makes sense. So 15-inch shelves and I would say you could probably fit like 20 mugs in it. Short mugs. Yeah. Like about 20.
Fit about 3 shelves worth maybe.
Yeah, 3 shelves worth of mugs and then probably 8 mugs on each shelf. Maybe 7.
Yeah.
Maybe 25.
Depends on this. Depends on the size of the. Yeah. We're talking glaze here, right?
Yeah. So yeah, it depends on the size of the mug, but that's kind of gives you a reference.
And the post size, but yeah.
Yeah, that kind of gives you a reference for the size. And what I love about the small kilns is that you can just turn them over really quick. And like that'll be my next size of kiln for sure.
Yep.
Just because it's a fun size. Yeah. So if what size of kiln do you have right now and you're literally doing like full production and you have two kilns this size?
I have two kilns, yeah. So I have the E23T.
Okay.
Which is 6.7 cubic feet.
Okay. And so it's
a little more than double the size of hers.
Good. So in comparison, that is the
We're gonna be calling out Scut. We're gonna be calling out Scuts here, so you have a reference point as well.
So yeah, just so you have a reference point too. So that's a 1027 in a Scut, and now you can.
That's the most popular Scut kiln, I believe.
Yes, that is by far the most popular Scut. And like KMT is the cone 10 one, but that doesn't matter. So that's a 7 cubic foot kiln. That's the same size my kiln is right now too.
Oh, and I thought yours was bigger than that.
I have a 7 cubic foot. Usually a 7 cubic foot either has a 27 or a 28 in the number that describes it, because it's 28 inches in depth or 27 inches in depth. So, yeah.
But this is mine's 20, has 23 in it. So it takes a 20 inch shelf.
No, depth, height.
Oh, height. Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. The, height of this one's 27 inches. Yep.
Yeah. So that's usually why it has the number in it, I believe. So like 18 would be 18 inches high, 27 would be 27 inches high. So if it's like a 1027 is 27 inches high, and 8.
You're talking 18, about the Scut numbers. I gotcha.
Yeah. I think that the L&Ls do kind of similar things too. I know that the Conards.
I think theirs are the L&Ls, like.
The width?
It's the width, I believe, because it says the 23T is 22 and 3. Nearly 23 diameter, 27 inches high.
Cool.
And then the other one is the smaller one is 16 and a half diameter by 23 inches high, but it's like, so it's not like exact, but
yeah. So anyway, a lot of the times you can figure out how high they are, how wide they are by the names that they're given, but we won't go into that too much. So, okay, if you were doing like half of the amount of work that you were doing, like if you're doing like what I'm doing right now, a 7 cubic foot is more than enough.
Yeah. Yes. If I think things change here because she already has a kiln.
Yeah.
And I think getting a 7 cubic foot would make the most logical sense for the next kiln, because you have a smaller one and you have a bigger one. Mm-hmm. I don't think going from like a 3 cubic foot to a 5.5 cubic foot, for instance, would make sense, because it's not that much bigger. So right. I think you kind of need that gap. Where I think the, because, you know, you have the choice of, you know, bisqueware can stack inside each other. They can stack on top of each other, depending on the form you're doing. Like maybe you're in a bowl mood and you want to throw a ton of bowls. You're going to be able to bisque fire that in the 7 cubic foot kiln a lot more comfortably than bisque firing them in the 3 cubic foot kiln. Like you're going to be very limited, but you might want to do a bisque firing of mugs in the smaller kiln just because they can stack nicely. They can take up a small amount of space. And you could get a decent number of them. Like, maybe you don't make 100 mugs at a time, but you make, like, you know, 20 to 30. Like, you could probably fit 20 to 30 in a bisque kiln pretty reasonably in a small kiln.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you got a lot of forms that are bigger and wider and plates and things, like, if you're making wide things, plates, that would be pretty limiting in a 3-cubic-foot kiln.
If I was looking at these two L&L kilns, and, like, okay, so if I wanted to get a 7-cubic-foot kiln and I had the choice, I would get the shorter one. It's the E28S3 instead of the E23T3 because it's got 28-inch shelves. First, those are great for plates. Second, if you are 5'2", which I am, you don't have to get on a stool to get to the bottom shelf. And that actually does fucking matter, okay? Because I've almost fell into a kiln before.
Yeah, and I think it's probably not comfortable getting up on a step stool and leaning down into the kiln.
It is not. And I've had a step stool by my kiln ever since I've had a kiln.
And you're probably missing out on space if you don't want to load the bottom of the kiln. Or, like you loaded my kiln here. You didn't put anything on the bottom shelf. You had, like, a 5-inch shelf or 5-inch post at the bottom. And then
nothing on the bottom of my shelf, right, of my kiln right now either.
Yeah, so you're wasting space. You know, you could do with one ring less and probably... you fit the same amount of stuff because you don't use the bottom. Well, you personally don't use the bottom. I don't know if Sarah does, but.
Nope. Because Sarah doesn't use, she doesn't have as much things to put in.
Yeah. Know? Her production's not as high as yours when you're throwing pots.
Right. But even when we're both doing fancy stuff, it's still not as much typically. So,
I do need to look up the Pottery Mason to see what kind of forms.
But to see. Technically, if I had the choice, I would 10 out of 10 get the shorter one if I could. For a multitude of reasons. One of them being you only have to replace two elements.
Yeah.
Instead of three. And also the replacing of elements. It's so much easier trying to get your freaking head into the bottom of a kiln that's horrible. Almost the same height as you is awful. It doesn't even matter if you have the fucking element guides or whatever.
Yeah, she okay. So her name's Audrey. She's got a very, very nice Instagram. You should check it out. So she does make a lot of production work. So it's not what quote unquote fancy like we're taught like you or Sarah makes. So the quantity is there. She will. I don't know how much production she's making, but
yeah,
she has the potential to be making
a lot.
That was going to be my recommendation. Was going to be something like the 28S, the shorter one. Actually, I think Megan Yarnell has that kiln at her house. Because I can see that it's the shorter version.
Because Megan's the same height as us.
Yeah. So the only difference is it takes up more of a footprint wherever you're putting it. So, you know, where you lose the height, you have width. So it's going to take a little more space depending on where your kiln's at. So be conscious of that. As well as if you're keeping your old kiln, you know, you basically need double the floor space, but really three times the floor space for your old kiln plus your new kiln. It's going to take up quite a bit. So,
yeah, I think that if you were one of those people, if you had more space, we're talking about Ryan here. If Ryan had more space in his life, I would have told him to get a 10-cubic-foot kiln instead of a 7-cubic-foot kiln, just because I know you're ever growing. Mm-hmm. And not that I think that getting the 7-cubic-foot kiln was a mistake, because it was pulling teeth just to get you a kiln regardless. But but I think that if I were Pottery Mason and I knew that I, I think before you buy a kiln, you really need to look at your long-term goals, because a new brand new kiln you will have for the rest of your life. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, so look at your long-term goals, and if your long-term goals are to start making big shit and to like also like hire employees maybe and to do production and to do this full time forever and ever, amen, then maybe a 10 cubic foot kiln is the way to go, and just invest in a really good stool. Like, you know, or they have the 8.5, but at that point you might as well just get the 10. Because
yeah, it's not much of a price difference between the 8.5 to 10.
Yeah. So when I had the studio, in Monroe, I had a 3 cubic foot, a 10 cubic foot, and a 17 cubic foot. And they were all used often.
Yeah.
And the 10 cubic foot, I was really sad to leave. Like, it was such a good size, you know? Like, you could fit 100 mugs in there.
So just for yourself... I'm sorry, I missed the part right before that, but were you just putting your work in there, or was it with the studio? No,
I was putting all the studio work in it, but it was just a really nice size. Like, the reason why I loved it was not necessarily the size of the kiln, but the size of the shelves. And that's why having that like short, wider one was nice, because it's got those 28-inch shelves. Having a 28-inch shelf means that you can put 4 plates in the kiln on one shelf.
Flat. Yeah, all the way down.
Flat. And so, I mean, like, ideally, as long as your plates aren't massive. But having the 7-cubic foot where they're 23-inch shelves, you can't do that. And so I think that that's something to consider as well. Like, if you're going to be a plate person... maybe figure out, you want to make sure that you're getting like a 28 inch shelf. So much
nicer. Or else you're going to need a bunch of full shelves probably, and a bunch of those plate stackers maybe.
Right.
And you're probably going to have to fill gaps around the outside of the plate stacker thing. And
yeah, exactly. And on top of that, if you're going to do any like oval platters or large platters, like having that extra space is really nice. You know, I did like my little earring tray that I have for my kiln. I had to fire it sideways because it wouldn't fit.
Oh, really?
Like standing up.
It looks like the widest thing she has is a few serving bowls, but most of them are pretty much like dog bowl shape.
Yeah.
Is kind of the biggest like diameter item she makes. Like I said, there's a few serving bowls, a few vases, but if you're and the, you know, the 28S is only, you know, 18 inches high, so taller things are going to be challenging. But maybe those tall things can go in your smaller kiln and you fire them like on their own if you happen to make a few tall things or something, you know, like glaze fire wise. But
I'm trying to find like the, okay, there's an 8-cubic foot kiln that Scut makes that has the 28-inch shelves. It's called the 1222. That's how high it is. That's why. Okay. And then there's I want to say the 7-cubic foot is, yeah, the 6.6-cubic foot is the 1218.
So it's shorter and squattier, kind of like
the
L&L one.
Yeah.
Okay. I do kind of like the idea, like having that 28-inch shelf. The time it takes to load, like you're only really talking about a couple shelves worth.
Yeah.
So the time it takes to load is actually shortened versus, you know, I got to make sure I make room for posts because I got to have at least 3 shelves worth on like a very spaced out kiln.
Right.
But, you know, I'm putting a lot more shelves. You know, I might end up putting on average, if you include the bottom shelf, I might have a total of half shelves and full shelves, maybe 7 to 8 right. shelves in a kiln. Whereas yeah. in the 28S one, you're probably only going to have maybe 4 at max.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how many thermocouples does the Easy Fire, I wonder how many thermocouples the double one, it must only have 2.
Yeah, it's got 2. Yeah, you can see the pictures on the inside of it.
Yeah.
I would imagine your firings are pretty damn even. I mean, besides the
right
zone control.
But that's another thing too, like having the short one, you only have to avoid 2 thermocouples instead of 3. Mm-hmm. Which is really nice. You know.
I would guess the Scuts only have 1.
Scuts only have 1.
Yeah.
Which can be a benefit if you're a production. But, you know.
Yeah, typically where the thermocouples fall for me is they don't fall, obviously they don't fall on the half shelf point. So, like, don't put the half shelf right where the thermocouples are. Yeah. So they're kind of like right in the middle between 2 posts. So if I have 3 posts on a half shelf side, I would have them right between 2 of the posts so that it's basically right kind of in that open air side of the shelf. So,
I just have issues with thermocouples just in general. So, and I only use full shelves. I barely ever use a half shelf. So, Okay. Let's talk about the 10 cubic foot and like what that looks like. Like, what scenarios do you think you would have to have a 10 cubic foot kiln? I feel like that's the type of kiln that you only can have 1 kiln, and it's a 10 cubic. You know, like, you're a full-time potter, you only have 1 kiln, and it's a 10. You know? Like, instead of having 2 kilns.
I was thinking maybe I actually know somebody that does this. High production, they gas fire everything, so they use a 10 cubic foot kiln to bisque fire everything.
Yeah.
And that's all they use it for.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're tumble stacking, they're making vast quantities of stuff. And this probably applies to more than 1 or 2 people that I can think of off the top of my head that they just use it for bisque firing and they just fucking crank through it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, the limit is that you only have 1 kiln, so like there's a, you know, if something goes down, your throughput is going to be shot if something, if you got to change elements or whatever. But you're not stressing it as hard if you're only using it for bisque,
right? But like, that's not reality for most people. Like, for most of our people listening, they're not electric
firing everything.
Yeah, they're not gonna. Like, I think that if I could only have 1 kiln and I was doing full-time pottery, I'd want a 10.
If you were, what, me, production-wise?
Yeah, and I could only have 1 kiln. And, like, I only had space for 1. Or I only had the power for 1. I'd want a 10 cubic foot kiln.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. Because, I mean, you could always leave it a little airy if you don't want to fill it all the way.
Yeah.
But you can't overfill it because there's only so much space. So.
But my ideal situation as a production potter is having a 10 cubic foot and a 3 cubic foot.
Really?
Yes.
Why the 3? I would think like a 7 and a 10 or a 5.5 and a 10, not a 3.
No, the 3 is really nice for like small orders that you need to get out now. It's like the 3 cubic foot is for like small bisques, and also like I would use it almost primarily for bisque, and I'd use it for like luster firings, decal firings, all of the small firings that I need. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd use it for.
What if you don't do decals or lusters and you I'm plan talking ahead about and you have me. Bisque wear?
Okay.
What if you're me?
If you were you, I'd probably want
and you had 2 kilns.
I still like the idea of having a big one and a small one. I still like that idea. It's just like nice because sometimes you don't need the big one and the small one's like good enough, you know?
I think I like the idea of the 10 cubic foot and maybe a 6 cubic foot.
Okay.
Like there's one here that's a 5.5 cubic foot. So it's the 23M. So it's basically my kiln, but a ring shorter.
Don't forget to pick up Pip's poop. What? No, it's out there. By the fence. Sorry, that was a sidetrack. Pip really had to go to the bathroom earlier. And so she went sounds like you took a shit. She took a shit by the fence. And I wasn't going to pick it up because Pip's not my dog. Also, so I didn't have any bags.
The 5.5 cubic foot is basically my kiln, but it's half a ring shorter.
Yeah.
And then the next size down is a full ring shorter, and it's 4.4. I feel like that'd be kind of an oddball. I don't know. Like, if I were able to trade in both of my kilns, I feel like that would be kind of what I would get.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the 10 takes up a lot of space. I don't know. I feel like studio-wise, I would actually need a little bit more space for a 10 cubic foot and the 5.5 because it's the same kiln body as mine, just shorter. I just don't fire. I'm trying to think of what, like right now with the mug club, like I would have used it for decal firings maybe, but in regular flow of work and how I like go through work,
you I don't need know it.
That I would use something that small.
Yeah.
Frequently at all. It would just get dust. It would collect dust. I don't think I would use it enough.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I've just always liked having a smaller one. Just personally, I've liked having a smaller one.
Yeah, I think your throughput, having a firebox or whatever the smallest doll kiln is.
Yeah.
And, you know, a 3-cubic-foot kiln would be perfect, right?
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about that. I know that a lot of people have asked me about the firebox. And let's see, L&L has a doll kiln.
The Firebox is what? Is a Scut brand or what is that?
Yes, Firebox is Scut. And
is that a 0.5 cubic foot? Right.
Fuck no. It's a... No? I don't know. That's
what all these test kilns are from L&L.
It's like 4 inches by 8 inches. I don't know why.
It's even smaller. It's probably on the... You can't find it on the Scut website?
No. Wait. It's very long. Okay, I found it. Sorry about me clicking. I just realized that people are listening to this. I have that 4x8 LT... And that is the one that goes to cone 10. It is, apparently it has no specs. It's got zero specs, according to Scut.
No specs?
It's got no specs.
What?
Nothing. There's no model, there's no phase, there's no volts.
Oh, shit. No, yeah, there's not. What the hell?
Get it together. Let's see if the other firebox has specs. No.
I think it's got it. What?
No specs for that one either.
They're like, we don't need specs. It's 8x6. That's all you need to know.
Yeah. So,
Oh, no, here it is. 0.22 cubic feet.
0.22.
This is off the ceramic shop. I can see the details.
Okay.
But it says it's a 15 amp. I don't think that's the same one.
Yeah, it's 15 amp.
Oh, is it? No. I thought it was a 120. Or okay, 15 amp. Yeah, sorry. I was mixing the volts up with the amps.
Yeah, 15 amp.
You can still use a regular 3-prong plug for that with just like any appliance you have, like a toaster, you know.
Yeah, and I believe that the 20 amp one is the one that has it sideways. It's got like the T in the okay. Yeah, so like the so okay, anyway. So
that is tiny.
Yeah, so it's very small. Very freaking small. It actually measures out to 4.5 inches height. They gave you a little
extra half inch.
A little extra.
Just so you could put a shelf in there. A half inch shelf.
Right. A half inch shelf. But if you add in shelves, which I don't a lot, if you add in shelves, it reduces the size significantly. I thankfully was given some shelves from Advancer, and they have helped dramatically because they're the right size. But also the other shelves that I use are actually just tiles.
I was gonna say, what if you just put kiln wash on a bisque tile? Okay.
Yeah, no, those are my other kilns, like my other, yeah, like,
because it's not holding weight really, so it's just right. To protect the bottom of the floor, so
yeah. But I don't, when I fire like 4 cups and stuff, I don't put a shelf down, I just put the cups in just straight on the brick.
Is it porous, kind of like a regular kiln is?
Yep, it's fire brick. It's fire brick. And what this is nice for is, like, people are always like, should I buy it like for like at home? No, no, you should not buy it if you're making more than 10 cups in a year. Like, it's
like,
not.
It sounds like you should only use it for earrings or something small like that. Not, yeah, it's not any ideal. Thrown items.
It's not ideal for thrown items. Yes, I use it on the road all the time for thrown items, but it's not something that I would just like throw like my cups in on a regular basis. It's not something like that, because not only that, but like I have to fire it to cone 6 to get it to cone 5. Like, you know, it's something that it's not reliable as far as temperature's concerned. And the size, it's not reliable. Like,
would you rely on it for like test tiles or something? If people were doing a lot of tests?
No. No. Like, I would not rely on it for anything that I need to be specific. Right?
How much is it, that crusty thermocouple, Becca?
How much what?
How much is the crusty thermocouple have to do with how reliable it is, you think?
Oh, it wasn't reliable from the get-go.
Okay.
It's just too small. It's too small, and it, like, it's not insulated enough. It's too small, you know, to be that reliable. They do have, like, Scut has the Glaze Tech kilns. Those ones are reliable because they are bigger. And they have a little bit more, like, oh, this one actually has specs. It's 1 cubic foot, and it's got a little bit more insulation, you know?
Okay, 1 cubic foot. So that is the what? Which one is that?
That's the Glaze Tech from Scut.
The Glaze Tech.
Yeah. So that is what, like, that guy,
I see one
in
that's
Hawaii, Cone Infinity, that's what he uses. I'm pretty sure Amy has one from Pines and Pottery. It's a great little kiln for, like, doing, like, that's the one that I would get if you're like, I don't have a lot of space for a kiln. I just need something that's reliable but small, like a true hobby potter. That's a good one if you didn't want to go for a 3 cubic foot.
Oh, sorry. I see the Glaze Tech now. Okay.
Yeah.
I was looking at the other ones, the KM614 and KM714. Those actually have like a regular control panel like the other Scuts.
Yeah, and
do.
I think the KM614 is the plug. It's a regular it like fits. That one you can fit 6 mugs in, I believe. And
it's 20 amps though.
It's 20 amps, so you have to get a special plug, but you can still plug it into a regular outlet. It's got, that's the one with the T connection. One of the prongs has a T, is sideways on it. So it just, that's just to make sure that you have enough amperage. You don't trip a breaker.
This one says 614 says cone 10, cone 6 though.
Yep, it's only a cone 6, and which is it is what
one,
it is.
It's 1 cubic foot.
Yeah. So that one's nice too if you want to do some like small stuff. Like this would be great if the 614, which I don't know if there's a equivalent within the LNLs, but the 614 would be great if all you needed to do was bisque your pieces so you could get them to another studio to fire. You know?
Oh, like if you're making stuff at home so that you don't break it in transit?
Yeah. Like that would be a perfect kiln for that because you can still plug it in. You don't have to like install a crazy plug. You know, it's just like good to go.
And you're talking about the 614, right? So that's the 1 cubic foot. I was trying to look at the LNL ones. A lot of the small doll test kilns are half a cubic foot. The smallest
the E14,
the smallest one is 1.5 cubic feet, which is the E14S.
Yeah, the E14S is good. I mean, it's like, it looks pretty small. It looks like about the same size. They just don't, like...
They have 12-inch shelves.
Yeah, basically, L&L wants all of their kilns to go to Cone 10, which is very admirable. And so they don't skimp on the electricity side, essentially, where... Scott's like, we understand that some people don't go past cone 6, so we're gonna like do this. But the problem with that is that like I got a cone 8 kiln and I didn't even realize it like before I was buying kilns, and it fucked me up, you know, like it fucked all my things up because I had to like replace elements all the time and do all, like so much.
Is there a big price difference between a cone 6 or a cone 8 and a cone 10 normally?
I feel like there is.
We don't have to go too much into pricing, but I mean, if it's that use case that we were just talking about, the bisque firing to get it to a studio, then you don't really care about the cone 10.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
It's good to be able to have it compatible to that just in case you do want to glaze fire something or throw some tests in there and not have to take all of your... you know, you wouldn't be like, oh, I got a cone 6 kiln, but I want to like try a few glaze tests, but I can't really do that because it's not a cone 10 kiln or a cone 8 kiln, you know.
Oh my god, this is fucking dumb. The problem is they don't tell you, I mean, it makes sense because like the distributor is not going to tell you the price typically, because they sell them all over the place, but I don't know the answer to that question, the difference in the cost.
You know what I just realized looking at the L&L cone 10 cubic foot is it says it's a cone 8.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
What?
I wonder if there's an upgrade for that or
shut up.
Now when I click on it, now it says cone 5. No. Cone 10 for all three cone 10 for all three phase models. See below for single phase.
Note about E28T3 easy fire kill on phase power. Huh. It's only rated to cone 5 when the power supply is 208 volts. Cone 8 when it's 240 volts. Interesting. Well, then I wouldn't recommend the... Well, I mean, if you had phase 3, it'd be fine. But that's pretty hard to come by.
I wonder if there's a... I'll research this on this side, but I was wondering if there's another front loading kiln that would be like 10 cubic feet that may.
Yeah, but like the front loading kilns are so fucking expensive. Like
10 cubic foot front loading cone, $10,000.
Yeah, that's like insane.
Versus $6,000 for a top loading.
Kilns are so much more expensive.
Sorry. You don't have to go to that level. You can get the, it says E-Quad Pro production kiln, 10 cubic foot, 6,500 for a cone 10. Those are the ones that have like each band actually has like the band will have pairs of element channels.
Oh,
I don't know if you're looking at them, but
yeah. So there's like,
do you see how it looks? Yeah. It's more densely packed with elements.
So it's just like a more pristine firing essentially. Holy shit, a 13.
There's 12 lines of elements in here.
Yeah, there's a 13.6 cubic foot one that's super fucking tall. Like, who's going to be able to get down into there? You'd have to be a giant to reach into that.
You'd probably put huge, like, bottles and vases in there and stuff.
I guess.
What kind of kiln did Danny Meisinger have? He did gas firing, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, and I think he bisques in his gas, too, because it just made sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
those tall ones. Whew. Yeah, that's very tall. Top loading. Okay, so the smaller ones, is there certain forms or things you're making that is not the whole bisque situation that you would recommend a small one for? Like jewelry or are there other similar types of things to jewelry that you would recommend it for?
Yeah, there was this, like, I saw this one lady in Chicago, or I didn't see her, but I saw her kiln, and she had like one of the smaller L&L kilns, and it was, and she did these little tiny figurines, and that's all she made, and that would be a perfect kiln for somebody like her, you know, like,
or what
that
about
size
the...
is perfect.
What about the woman that's at the Tilted Kiln that makes the little nuggets?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Deb. I think her name's Deb. Yes.
Nuggets? Or I think I see some people that make little houses and stuff.
Yeah.
The little sculptures.
Like, that's perfect. Like, if you're doing super small stuff, a small kiln is perfect for that. Like, a 1.5 cubic foot, 2 cubic foot, something like that. Is ideal. I would still probably get a 3 because you never know, like, when you want to do something bigger. If you have the room, I would probably get a 3. But if you're always only making super, super small things, then, you know, getting a, getting the tiny one. What's nice about, like, me and Deanna have talked about it is that, so Deanna is my friend that also does jewelry, and she is the one that, like, literally, I was like, I need that kiln when I saw the jewelry kiln. And she's been thinking about getting a second one because here's the thing.
The one just like the one you have, right?
Yeah.
The Firebox one?
Okay. The Firebox, yeah. She's been thinking about getting a second one because the thing is, she could get a second kiln and, like, fire them off and on, you know? Like, plug one in, unplug it, plug the other one in. And it would be... I don't know, the most you'd pay for two of them is $2,500. Like, the Firebox is like $1,100, I think now. I got it for $900, but like, it is dirt cheap compared to like a full on kiln.
Then getting this 1.5 cubic foot L&L for $2,500?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yes, because I mean, like, having two and being able to go back and forth is really nice for like little things like that.
But you could fit more in the 1.5 cubic. You could fit
yeah for for sure.
You could fit way more in that
way
than
more.
The small firebox, yeah. But because it is 1.5 cubic feet, but it's also like if it's still short stuff, you still have a lot of headroom in your kiln. You just can't utilize it because you literally can't put another shelf in there,
right?
Because your pieces would be right on the top of the kiln.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, I like that. Little nuggets, little hand. What about hand building? Is there an optimal hand building type of kiln that you think would be good for, like, I mean, like Amy Brummond is a little different example because she does make like production hand building.
Oh my gosh, I had to switch out my headphone and then it fucked me over. So we're gonna be off. Hey, at 30 seconds, can we both clap, please? Okay, thanks. So what was your question?
Is there an optimal kiln size that you think a hand builder that is not a Amy Brumman production hand builder, quote unquote, would see benefit
in? If I was a
hand
builder, I'd want something wide and short, because like usually hand building comes with like wider and shorter things. It's funner to make short and wide things when you're hand building.
Okay. So that would be like this 4.4 cubic foot.
Yeah.
Maybe. I still think that, yeah, that 3.2 cubic foot is a pretty versatile size, I think. If it's like first kiln. I don't know. What about a first kiln for somebody? Like, if they're going to pay brand new, is there an optimal size for...
God, that's such a fucking hard question. I think if I was going to buy my very first kiln, and I'd probably want to get the 5 cubic foot kiln. The 5.5.
Okay.
The E23M-3 L&L. It's still got two elements, but it's got a little bit more height. And two sets of elements. So it's got a little bit more height, and it wouldn't be so tall. Like, you can reach to the bottom. It's fairly good size. My first kiln was a 3 cubic foot. Your first kiln was a 3 cubic foot.
Yeah, I think it was 3 cubic foot, but you could put a blank ring in there to get maybe 4.5 with a bisque firing. But it was a blank ring, so there was no elements.
Yeah,
in it.
If I was like brand new, if it was like my first kiln, and I like knew I was going to do this for a lot of years, 5 cubic foot. If I was brand new, I had a bunch of money in my pocket, and this was just a hobby, 3.2 cubic foot.
Okay, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean. The logical next step, if you have that 3.2 cubic foot, is to get a 7 cubic foot from there. If you're like turning it over, I just think like you could easily keep, like we're talking about, we wish we had 3 cubic foot kiln. Like if I got another kiln, I would get a 3 cubic foot kiln. I don't think I would get a 10 cubic foot. I think I would get a 3 cubic foot, and I would have three, and I would have that little bitty guy. Like I could find space for that little guy, but, you know, you're going to have a lot of life out of that. You know, there's points where I'm like, I wish I still had a 3 cubic foot, but it didn't have the controller on it. So, you know, that's the variable that, you know, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm glad I don't have that, cause I don't have to babysit it and it's more consistent, but, but yeah, that 3 cubic foot's going to serve you pretty long. And then the 7 cubic foot's going to like ramp up that production and keep you
right, like put you into the next level. Yeah
my old Olympic was 5.5, I think, cubic feet. 5.8, I think it was. Almost 6. Yeah, so it was a 6, and then I had that, like, you know, the 7 cubic foot one that I still have. So I had a 6 and a 7.
So. Yeah, it's funny how like long we've talked about three different sizes of kilns. Like like how interesting.
It's a big decision. Like you really need to think about a lot of this stuff when you're like
it is a big decision.
I mean, a lot of it is there, and then some of it is you're going through used kilns and you're like stumbling across things and you kind of make that gut decision of, ooh, this one looks like such a good price, but I don't have a lot of options out there and it's used. Like, I feel like I need to splurge for this one where it might be too big of a kiln for you and you can't, like, you can't utilize it for like what you actually need because it's just so massive.
Yeah.
That you're like, I'm stuck with this. And you're like, maybe I'll get to the, and you get it and you're like, maybe I'll start making bigger pieces. Or like, I've always wanted to make bigger pieces. So you get this huge kiln with that like inkling that's like barely a nugget in your head, but it's not like a driving force. But then you're like, well, now I got to take for fucking ever to start this kiln on because I just can't make production to fill it, you know?
Right.
And then you're like, it takes up so much fucking space too, you know?
Okay, let's talk about in what universe you should have an oval kiln.
That was going to be my next question. You're running a pottery studio?
Yeah.
Like, or there's no way. I don't know that an individual, unless you just throw production and you're just cranking it.
Yeah, I think you have to have employees. I think, like, you'd have to have employees to, like, and you're making massive pieces, like, huge pieces. Like, when I was working at Graves Co., like, we were throwing, like, 14-inch bowls on a regular basis, you know, and those all went into the oval kiln. I will say that if you can avoid getting an oval kiln from Scut, do it. Do not buy an oval kiln from Scut. Just don't.
Why not?
So, the way that this...
Or who is a superior one, and then you can compare, like, why this one over this one, if you've...
Olympic is superior to Scut.
Okay.
So, or, I mean, I don't know, I haven't looked at the Cone Art website anytime soon to see if they have an oval, but... The deal with the Scut is that their shelving system on the very bottom of the kiln is really weird. And you lose like half of your base because there's like, I don't know if there's an element in the bottom, but it's super fucking strange how they have it set up. And it's really, it wastes like so much space. Now, the Olympic just, you literally, I had the biggest oval fucking shelf for my.
I can't believe that. When you said that it's a solid shelf, I was like, how are you still alive, like, picking that thing up? Or how did you not, like, throw your back out? You need somebody else to help you get it in there.
I put it in
when... Or you did it before you put the ring, right?
Yeah, I put it in before I put the ring on. But,
You're never getting that thing out once it's put together.
No, and, like, taking apart that kiln was such a fucking pain in the ass. And I sold that kiln to a lady that I'm pretty sure did not do pottery, like, at all.
Oh.
Like, she did, oh, but, God. Like, she, like, bought this
oval You sold kiln. Her the kiln that she could never use.
I sold her a kiln that's probably still in her garage, not being used. And I feel bad about it, but at the same time, what else was
you
I going to
You gave her a
do?
Fucking... I think you gave her a fucking deal on it, though, because I think you got a deal on it, so...
I did get a deal on it.
It was one of those that she probably couldn't pass it up, and she had aspirations.
I think I sold it to her for $3,000, yeah.
I think that was her first kiln, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, her second first kiln.
Oh my gosh, I feel sorry for her.
Oh, Cone Art does have an oval kiln, because Rebecca has
they
one.
They do, I'm looking at them. I'm looking at
and
them,
it's
but
so
I only
cool.
see... I only see one of them. One
got
photo
a metal
it doesn't show
top.
Me inside pictures or anything.
It's got a Does metal it? Top and it's not the like kiln brick, it's like the whole it's like a solid piece of aluminum on the top.
Yeah. I mean, these, the roofs of these cone arts look pretty badass. The yeah. lids. I mean, you're talking about the metal casing on the outside, but also the inside lid, like, looks super fucking legit. Yeah. I don't know if that's just on the ovals. The other ones look pretty much the same.
Honestly, I'm on Sheffield Pottery, and their oval cone art kiln is $7,000. Is it? Oh, no. It's $7,600, and that's not freaking bad for, like, what we're working with in this economy. But, like,
I kind of like the... These, so it looks like the cone art, they have a square, a rectangle shelf, and then two half shelves.
Yeah, that's how it works. So it's like two half shelves and then one rectangle in the middle.
In the middle, yeah. 21 by 10 in the middle is what this one size is. 21 yeah. by 10 and then 21 inch half round.
Yeah. Whew.
That's a big boy.
And I had fucking advancers for that motherfucker.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so studio or people working for you, did you do everything in there? Did you do bisque fire? I mean, you had multiple kilns, but...
Oh, I never... Well, the only time I bisqued in the oval kiln was when I had, like, huge planters.
And what did you have, like 40 of them or something? Like, you had a lot that you actually needed that space? It was like a
wholesale order, yeah. Yeah, okay. It was a wholesale order.
Yeah, if you have so much work that you can't fit, if you have more than like two kiln loads worth in your regular kiln of bisqueware, like, yeah, that's pushing it. But hopefully
let's you don't have to. Let's just say this. If you make planters that are 13 inches wide, you need an oval kiln. Okay? Like, if you make more than 10 of them in a week, you need an oval kiln.
I mean, that's a good point of people. I mean, what if they get a wholesale order for this? They promise this wholesale order and they're like, my kiln can handle it. But it's like, you're not thinking of the actual space it's going to take to actually get those through the cycle.
Yeah.
Of making to make, like, you know, how much energy are you going to spend electricity wise? Okay. I mean, most of mine is controlled by, like, I only make enough greenware for the shelves that I have available to store greenware and, like, table space. If that thing's full, like, I'm fucking loading that kiln up. If I need to put a big preheat on it, like, I mean, there's no reason that I should have that many pieces that aren't ready for a bisque. I mean, I'm pretty good about getting it through the cycle, through the bisque and stuff, and just getting them on another shelf, but yeah. The oval just sounds like a big undertaking.
Yeah.
Conor has these square ones, it looks like.
Yeah, they do.
I don't know what kind of shelves those... I guess those just take square shelves, yeah. 21 by 21. And then 21 by 10, so it's like two of those half shelves. Interesting. Okay, last thing. Does any of this change if you don't have an electronic controller and you're going with like a kiln setter?
Abort.
Is there kind of
abort. A run away? Run
is there
away.
Kind of a limit? Is there a size limit where you would be like a little uneasy about using the kiln sitter? Like, would 7 cubic foot with a kiln sitter be a little too risky?
7 cubic foot with the kiln sitter.
I think that could get to a little bit of a risk.
I've had a 7 cubic foot kiln sitter, and it's not that risky. But I will tell you that if you have a kiln sitter and you have a 7 cubic foot kiln, I guarantee you that the bottom is not firing the same as the top. So, because it's not insulated enough, it can't figure its shit out enough to get that insulation going.
Is that just because the, like, generally the bricks are not quite as thick?
Yeah.
I feel like a 3 cubic foot kiln sitter is okay.
Totally. 100%.
Yeah. That's like the Duncan teacher kiln that I had. I think if you can, if you could almost scoop up a 3 cubic foot kiln sitter kiln for next to nothing, or like less than a couple $100, like
get it
for your first kiln
all day, every day.
That's a great first kiln. All right.
Yeah, I'm losing.
Ooh,
I'm losing.
All right. Big investment getting your kiln. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, going from that kiln sitter to that controller, like, it's hard to never go back, but
it pays. It is hard. I remember when I had my kiln sitter and I was like, I don't want an electronic controller. These are so unsafe. Blah, 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 blah. And now I'm like, fuck that shit. I'm going to leave my motherfucking kiln.
set it, forget it.
Yeah.
I remember early days I had it in my parents' basement venting out. I would start the kiln at like 4 in the morning, wake up, turn it on, go sleep on the futon over in the basement. Like on the other half of the basement. Set an alarm for 2 hours. Wake up, go turn the kiln up a little bit more, turn those knobs, set my alarm for an hour or two, turn those knobs again. I was fucking, yeah.
That was the worst. It was the fucking worst.
I don't miss those days. I mean, I didn't have as heavy of a workload those days, so it wasn't as big of a deal. But if I had other commitments, it would be kind of a nightmare.
Yeah. For sure. Well, Lloyd is ready to go.
All right. Good luck with those kiln purchases. Look up Hot Kilns. They got all your different kiln bodies and comparing all that stuff if you want to see the ones that we were talking about. You could see prices on there, too. They actually list the prices. So.
Yeah, that's nice. It's fucking dumb that Scud doesn't list their prices.
Yeah. But it could be based on what you have available in your area and, you know, if there's Scuds in your area and people can service them and all that stuff. But, all right. Good luck out there. Let us know if you have any questions. I mean, we're happy to answer. I'm sure you've helped a lot of people with questions about kilns and stuff and like, hey, should I get this or should I not get this or... what do you think about this? So
I've done many Facebook Marketplace searches with people. Yes, I have.
Yeah. All right. Yep. Thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah.
We'll catch you next time.
Later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Hey everybody. Thanks for listening to another episode of Wheel Talk. This podcast is made possible through the contributions of all of our listeners who always ask us great questions, leave us reviews, and contact with us through social media. Thanks to all the fellow makers as well who take time to be interviewed and share about their lives and businesses.
And thank you to Ashley from Boldover Ceramics and Lindy from Lindy Garner Ceramics for their assistance on the Wheel Talk podcast Instagram. You are invaluable. Thank you to everybody.